Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. This hour, as part of our ongoing series, San Francisco Government from the Inside, I'm speaking with Bevan Dufty, Director of the Mayor's Office of Housing, Opportunity, Partnerships, and Engagement, also known as HOPE-SF. He's also the mayor's point person on homelessness. According to the most recent count, there are more than 6,000 homeless individuals in San Francisco, a sobering figure that over the last 10 years has remained virtually unchanged. Yet, over the same period, the city has made strides in addressing the problem. It has cut chronic homelessness in half, it has placed more than 11,000 people into permanent supportive housing programs, and it has created more than 2,500 units of new supportive housing, with hundreds more slated to be constructed in the next few years. It has also made significant progress through partnerships with federal agencies in reducing homelessness among veterans. But what more can the city do to connect the homeless to the services they need and to help people leave the streets for the long term? Does anything about the supportive housing model need to change? Do we need to spend more? And how can the city better engage the public at large in finding humane and lasting solutions? So joining me in the studio tonight to discuss these issues is Bevan Dufty. He was appointed to serve as the Director of Housing Opportunity, Partnerships, and Engagement in January 2012 by Mayor Ed Lee. HOPE-SF is dedicated to addressing homeless services and better outcomes for individuals who are homeless or live in supportive housing. Previously, from 2002 to 2011, Bevan represented District 8 on the Board of Supervisors. He also served for 5 years as the city's Director of Neighborhood Services under Mayor Willie Brown, where he helped neighborhood residents and merchants connect with city agencies to address a range of issues. He has also long focused on homelessness, supporting Care Not Cash and Mayor Newsom's Housing First approach that expanded supportive housing. He also helped establish the Castro Young Adult Housing Collaborative, secured board approval for the Community Justice Center, and worked to prevent homelessness among transitional youth and restructured the court's approach to habitual offenders. So welcome, Bevan Dufty.
Thank you.
And as always, we invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation. You can dial 415-841-4134 in about 20 minutes to join our conversation. You could also email us or text us now at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment at the City Visions page at the KALW website. And of course, I just wanted to remind our listeners that we're in the middle of our fall membership drive. If you have a moment, please go to the phone and call 1-800-525-9917 or click at kalw.org. to show your support for this station. And in the spirit of full disclosure, I do want to remind our listeners that I am an employee of the San Francisco Department of Public Health. In fact, I'm the Director of Primary Care Homeless Services for the department. And the views expressed tonight do not match the views or and represent the views, of DPH. I don't know why I'm so...
Tongue-tied
tonight. Maybe it's because...
You've said a lot.
Because we're talking about a topic that's near and dear to my heart and to yours as well, Bevan. And I wanted to start our interview by asking you a question. 10 years since the plan for ending homelessness in San Francisco was put forth by then-Mayor Gavin Newsom. 10 years out now, can we actually still hope or aim to end homelessness?
10 years ago when Gavin took office, he had passed the prior year Care Not Cash, which is a massive restructuring of our general assistance program. And it really emphasized the fact that probably a third of the people receiving GA at the time were homeless and clearly were not able to exit homelessness successfully, even though San Francisco had the highest cash benefit of $400 a month. And so the premise was that individuals who identified as homeless would only receive $59, but they would have a dedicated shelter bed, but they would be on a defined path to housing. And as you indicated, over 11,000 people have been housed, and many individuals have been housed through the Care Not Cash program. So when Mayor Newsom took office, he brought together an assemblage of scores of San Franciscans. There were Republicans. There was Paul Bowden, who at the time was with the Coalition on Homelessness. Angela Alioto, the past president of the Board of Supervisors, convened the panel. And I really think that their report stands the test of time. If you look at it, it looks at the justice system. And one of the things that I think you can say is positive is that at the time, 40% of people in jail were homeless, and that number is down to 20%. And I think that that is important. Is homelessness over-criminalized? Are people, because of their status as homeless individuals, subject to citations and tickets and things that wind up being barriers to housing? Yes. But I think that if you look at that report, it does, to me, stand the test of time in terms of its recommendations. And, you know, some of the things were at the time, people said, we don't think that there should be shelters. And that back then, I think there were about 1,900 shelter beds in San Francisco. Now, there are around 1,145. And so the emphasis was on permanent housing. But I can tell you that shelter remains a very important tool in our toolbox. And we're seeking to open the first LGBTQ shelter of 24 beds. We still need to open a shelter in the Bayview so that we have an emergency response system in a neighborhood that has the second highest rate of homelessness after the Tenderloin. So I remain very hopeful. I think that the major issue is that there are some suppositions that people have about homelessness. I think that for people that are fortunate enough, like I am, to go home to a house and to have a job, there's the notion that somehow people want to be homeless, that somehow that people are refusing services, that somehow the young people we see in the Haight-Ashbury are exploring a very adventurous and romantic lifestyle living in Golden Gate Park, when it's the furthest thing from the truth. Most of these young people have escaped terrible homes and upbringing, where they've been raised in violence, where they've been raised in a community that doesn't accept them because they're gay or transgendered, and in environments where they have become drug addicts themselves because they've been raised around drug addiction all their lives. And so I really seek in talking to people and talking to you tonight to really beg people to understand the humanity of people that are homeless and understand that their lives are complicated and incremental in the way ours are. We have good periods where we're successful in things that we're doing with our life, and we have bad periods. And then I find that people who I've worked with who are my clients are just incredibly decent people. And it reminds me every day that but for a few turns in my life, I might be among them.
So you said a lot there, not only about the trajectory of the last 10 years, but about how to engage the public in terms of trying to humanize those who are experiencing homelessness.
Well, the truth is that I've really come to question where I think that systems of political systems are going to be as responsive to homelessness as the public is. Among the public, I see a real hunger for straight talk, to just be talked to realistically about things and not to offer large pronouncements. And I'm a reform politician. I'm no better than anyone else that's elected to office. I'm not holding myself up. But I can tell you that after being on the streets the past 2.5 years, talking to people, I see it differently. And I wish everyone that held office would spend a significant period of time just being there. It's why I love Congresswoman Jackie Speier. Just spending one night in a shelter in San Mateo changed how she saw things. Supervisor Jane Kim going early in her tenure as a supervisor and staying at next door and seeing how people sought her out to help her understand where she could apply for benefits or where she could be safer, just knowing that she was a new face there. And for her, being there in a shelter at night with nothing to do, because we require people to check in and there's nothing for people to do for hours on end, and feeling how debilitating that can be. And I think that human experience of what homelessness translates for people, I think, is really important. But for me, I think I've come more and more to believe that the energy and that the change that's going to help end homelessness in San Francisco is going to have to come from the public.
So to speaking to the public, because you have that opportunity tonight, how would you explain the fact that the homeless count has remained steady at around 6,400 people over the last several years? How would you describe what the dynamics of that are and balance that against the successes that you've already pointed to?
Well, I don't think I have to explain to anyone listening in San Francisco. You have been with us through this incredible recession, and I was a supervisor looking at budgets that the mayor had to put forward with enormous cuts in public health, substance abuse, mental health treatment. We had terrible years during the recession, and we suffered mightily, and then it seemed like it thawed slowly and slowly and slowly, and then right before us, the economy transformed and we became an economic engine with technology jobs, and we are we have a higher rate of actual job increase than 46 states in the country. And we have seen the benefit of that. But we've also seen the downside in terms of real estate speculation, increased costs. And this does not just affect working class or upper middle class people. It affects everyone. And so in the marketplace of housing, better SRO rooms have become more expensive, and that is deeply impacting policy. Probably the most success that we're able to have right now, as you indicated, is in the area of veterans, because President Obama set an ambitious goal of ending veterans homelessness by 2015. We're now extending that. We will end chronic veterans homelessness by next year, and the goal being now 2016. But I think that's what's important in homelessness. Unfortunately, most members of the public only see what's not working. They see the people who are not succeeding for a variety of reasons, and I don't blame those individuals. In many cases, it's because the system's not working for them, but they don't see what's working. And so I think that there is a healthy skepticism about government and the city's ability to impact and end homelessness. And what I would say is, look in the veterans arena, where we're getting vouchers from the federal government, and we probably have about 700 homeless veterans in San Francisco. We've reduced veterans homelessness by 30% over the past 2 years. We're about to open in the next 2 months 130 new units of housing in the downtown for chronically homeless veterans, and imagine that 130 out of 700. But what I say this because we need the federal government to set a goal about ending young adult homelessness. We have 915 homeless young people between the ages of 18 and 24. We have an LGBT homelessness rate that's 29% for young adults, adults, and seniors, unprecedented for any city in this country to see a consistency of basically 30% homelessness. And so I beseech and say, let's have an ambitious goal and set it. But I think really the energy is, the spark is going to come from the citizenry, I believe. It's why Project Homeless Connect has been such a success over 10 years.
Hmm. And some of the comments, concerns, criticisms that have come out in the wake of the mayor's report back in June was that perhaps there's been a shift in the amount of dedicated services and money and attention paid to homelessness with respect to former Mayor Gavin Newsom, and that Mayor Lee is really not focusing as much on homelessness as Gavin Newsom did, and that's perhaps a shift people are very concerned about. How do you respond to that concern, that critique?
Well, the mayor has been extremely supportive of veterans homelessness. He put two initiatives in his budget this year that are going to help us to house hundreds of individuals. When there was controversy around adding a shelter in the Bayview, the mayor stood tall. I sat in a meeting with several opponents that were very direct about it, and it's clear these individuals are upset with the mayor. And the mayor said, my responsibility is to make decisions that are right for the city and not to make decisions that are necessarily in my best interest. And so he's been courageous around the issue of the Bayview shelter. But I really think that we should not make homelessness an imprint for any mayor. It's a challenge for our city. It is a challenge for our school district that has scores and scores of homeless families all of the schools, and they are struggling to address that and to work with it. And I think that the recognition that the fundamental problem is that we mistakenly see homeless people as different from ourselves. We don't look at them when we pass them on the street. We make assumptions about people who panhandle that are not proven to be accurate based on a survey or research study done by the Union Square Merchants. I mean, the assumption I had come to believe that maybe 50% of the people who panhandled weren't in fact homeless, and bless the Union Square Business Improvement District, they hired a research firm and they interviewed 150 consistent panhandlers and 500 people that donated to them. And the major thing that was learned was that tourists don't give to panhandlers. The people that give to panhandlers in the Union Square area are people that are working low-wage jobs. These are the people that are the chambermaids, they're bussing tables, they're working as store clerks, and they stop, and I'm looking at you right now. They see Joseph every day, and they're going to say, "Hey, Joseph, how are you doing?" and pop a dollar bill. So this notion somehow that we needed to educate people coming from Iowa or Paris or wherever to tell them not to donate, that's just mean-spirited. The reality is it's people who themselves can see what homelessness is like, who may be a paycheck away from being homeless and being compassionate. And so, you know, here I am as a Jew. We're approaching Rosh Hashanah. We're approaching Yom Kippur. And I say to my Jewish brethren, please think about Hand Up. Go to handup.us. Think about making a human connection with someone whose story you read that resonates with you. I had an amazing experience months ago where there were the chess players that people are familiar with that are on Market Street between 5th and 6th Streets. And unfortunately, drug dealers had insinuated themselves into that chess game. Why? Because they know that people don't look at homeless people, and that people looked at that and they're like, "Oh, I'm not going to look at that. I'm just going to walk by." And they threw a $20 bill down, and then they would sit for 4 hours and were not playing chess, but were instead plying their trade so that the cops wouldn't pay attention to them. And when the captain at the time, Mike Redman, saw it, he kicked the chess game out of there. And the Chronicle wrote a story about a guy, Marvin Boykins, who had been there for 10 years and he was homeless, but he had that chess game. And 2 days after that story appeared, I got an email from two people who said something that wasn't in the story, that they'd gone to Lowell High School with Marvin, and that Marvin was approaching within 6 weeks the 40th anniversary of his graduation from Lowell High School. That's such a deep, intense thing for so many of us that recognize how tough it is to get into Lowell and what possibility there was in his life. And we connected through Captain Redman with Marvin. He was open to a profile on Hand Up, and over $8,000 was raised for him from Lowell alumni. And he went to his high school reunion. And it's not a Hallmark story, but it's progress, and it demonstrates to me that I think that people really do care and want to end it. I think they just feel lost because it seems as though no matter what, things don't change.
Exactly. And I think that's the question here is, why don't things seem to change? And you've said a little bit about that. So just to stay with the mayor for a minute and his policies moving forward. So he's given himself a C. Where is he? What is he doing?
He kind of gave me a C. I don't think he gave himself a C.
Well, you know.
Thanks. So, that was diplomatic, but not accurate. Was a rough morning. Yep.
So,
but hey, I get it. You know,
what's
because
next?
What people, I mean, because fundamentally, people want homelessness to go away. And I think it's just stopping and saying, you know what? All the police efforts, all the street cleaning, all the infraction citations, they're only going to move the problem. They might, with enough citations, move somebody into jail for 72 hours. They might move them from one side of the street to another. I'm working with two amazing police captains. Like, I love our police department. And the captain in Southern is Bill Raldis, and the captain in Mission is Dan Perea. These gentlemen say to me, nobody talks to them about crime in their district. The only thing people talk about is homelessness. And I was out in the design district this morning. We probably had 20 people doing outreach because it's been very hot down there and a lot of people, a lot of tents, you know, going on. But it's just one of those things that you know, I just say, okay, we're going to spend the money. Like, it's going to be spent. It's either going to be spent in a non-productive way to spend for police moving people or street cleaners moving people or getting people, you know, cycling in and out of sobering centers and things of that sort, or we're just going to make an investment in permanent housing. And the cities that you see really succeeding are the cities where, look at the state of Utah. We're going to go see what's going on in Utah there. But it's a synergy between the Mormon church and Utah government, state, and Salt Lake City government, which is just not, on a non-judgmental basis, don't give me a waiting list, don't give me seven hoops I got to jump through with pieces of paper that I got to process and do, even though I'm living on the street. Just tell me, you know what, Joseph, we're going to move you in this apartment. And guess what? We're pretty confident that we can connect you with benefits. We've done an assessment and we figure you might get SSI, you might get this, you might qualify for food stamps, but we're going to move you in this housing because it's going to be so much better. And even though we are a housing first city, I think that there are times at which that some of the people involved in Housing First have kind of lost the way and figured out that it is okay to, you know, make all these requirements. We opened a youth building, and I fought hard to get a youth building open on Fifth Street. But the funding from the federal government, which was more than half of it, required chronic homelessness of a year or more. But yet and still, we required that before they moved in, that they had to have a benefit, which meant they had to get on GA, which is not easy to do when you're living in Golden Gate Park. And so that's where it doesn't make sense, and I think we can do a better job.
Lots more to get to with our guest Bevin Dufty, but we're going to take a short break to ask for your support for City Visions and for KLW.
I'm Kevin Vance here with David Onick, who is one of the co-hosts of City Visions. Good evening, David.
Hello, Kevin.
We're working on, for this hour, we have been challenged to the amount of $365 being offered to us on the condition that we can raise 10 calls or clicks from you in your calls of support at 800-525-9917 or go to our website, which is kalw.org. One caller, Peter in San Francisco, loves the morning and evening programming and is delighted at the non-corporate aspect of KLW. Thank you, Peter, for your support. Again, our number 800-525-9917, our website, klw.org. David.
And Kevin, what we're listening to right now, a candid conversation with Bevin Dufty by Joseph, is really the type of community program that we're able to bring you on City Visions. City Visions is really a community-driven radio program. KLW is a community radio station. You, our listeners, are part of our community. Support our collective community today by calling 800-525-9917 or go to the web, www.kalw.org. And please join us.
And I love the story that we heard, and we're going to hear more stories about the issues of the day and the issues of the city, and especially of homelessness on this evening's edition of City Visions, making it real for you. And that's what KLW tries to do for you. Please support us in our efforts. 800-525-9917, KALW.org. Back to City Visions.
And this is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're discussing homelessness with my guest Bevin Dufty, Director of the Mayor's Office of Housing Opportunity Partnerships and Engagement. We invite you to call in or text with your questions and comments. 415-841-4134 is the number to do so. Again, 415-841-4134. What about the city's approach to homelessness is or isn't working for you? 415-841-4134. You can also email us at cityvisions@klw.org or post a comment at the City Visions page at the KLW website. So, Bevin, I wanted to go back to something about permanent supportive housing, which was a cornerstone of the 10-year plan. Another concern is that there's been a slowdown in the number of new units being planned. Is that true, and why is that, if it is true?
Well, the pipeline, which identifies projects coming forward, is not as robust as it's been in recent years. So in the past 3 years, we've opened up two major buildings, the Richardson Building, which is at Fulton and Goff, and then the Rene Kazanov Building that is between 1st and 2nd and Folsom. And each of those were 120 units of supportive housing for chronically homeless individuals. I'm sure you have clients that have gotten into this building, these two buildings, and they're beautiful buildings that really support some of our most troubled individuals who are on the street. So the projects that are in the pipeline are family projects, and I agree, I would like to see more in this arena for single adults and for homeless families coming down the road. I think that that is something that the mayor's Office of Housing is going to be looking at because, as you know, in Mayor Lee's early tenure, he passed Proposition C, which takes the sweet spot of properties sold between $1 million and $4 million and takes the property transfer tax and dedicates it. It's the first time since 1996 that we've had a dedicated funding source for affordable housing. So I am very hopeful about it. And I want to say, ironically, when you refer to it as HOPE-SF, HOPE-SF is a different initiative. That is an initiative about rebuilding our public housing. But I do want to say that Mayor Lee has made public housing over this past year a very high priority. He's reshaped the Housing Authority Commission with stellar people. He's brought in some great talent into the Housing Authority executive leadership, and he's investing millions of dollars on elevators, deferred maintenance, a lot of things that you'd say, well, wait a minute, shouldn't the city have been doing this? No, this was a commitment from the federal government, but for years they've been basically providing 83 cents on the dollar of what they know it costs to provide a housing service, and we've seen public housing deteriorate. And to me, a robust, great public housing system is a great answer to homelessness, and I'm hopeful that in the next few years we'll see that.
And so what do you project at this point, knowing what you know about how many more units of housing, whether it comes through new build-outs or housing in the Housing Authority?
Well, I guess I want to pivot again and go back to the fact that our discussion, and I understand we want to get inside city government, but let's be real. One of the reasons we've been successful of late with family homelessness is because of Mark and Lynn Benioff. I mean, the Salesforce, the Mark Benioff of Salesforce, we opened a convent at 9th and Geary, a convent that was shuttered, and we opened it up, and now we have 14 families that are living there, single-headed, female-headed households, because it was a convent, and so it's difficult, it's tough, can't put male and female households with kids in it. But it's been a game changer, and the Benioffs have funded resources for additional housing counselors. How tough is it to find an apartment in the Bay Area? 70% of the families that we provide assistance to be housed, were homeless in San Francisco, wind up in the East Bay. And so, the last thing that the Benioffs have done is they're stepped up and they're doing a major investment and incentive drive for Raphael House, which is a non-city funded family homelessness. So again, when I brought up Utah, I talked about the relationship between the Mormon Church and government in Utah. And what we have here is an axis of technology that these companies, that some are mature, some are not, but I think that the mayor's leadership within the technology field could bring about that type of partnership that we saw that was a game changer in Utah. And again, I just want to keep talking about not just what, for so many years, San Francisco has tried to solve homelessness virtually on our own. No money from the federal government, no money from the state government, some money from the federal government. But I think, again, that, broadening this and saying, look at the entrepreneurs. Hand Up is founded by a young woman, and it's not a nonprofit. Lava May, where I worked with her to get 5 Muni buses, that first bus is amazing, offering showers to people. To go out with her and see, there's a family of 5 that has showered every week there since they started, because that's the access that they have to a shower because of the shelter that they have to live at. And look, there's a group, feedingforward.org. Go see what they're doing about never wasting food and getting it to places, because a lot of people that are housed are hungry in San Francisco. People who receive SSI, which means they're on disability because of state decision-making, are not eligible for food stamps. And there are a lot of hungry people that should be more successful, or could be.
So you have kept shifting our conversation very appropriately towards
I'm a reform politician, baby. That's what I do.
the broader issues here, which are, there's the politics and such, but then there is the will behind it. So tell me a little bit about, let's reflect back on your last few years in this position, but also the previous years on the Board of Supervisors. You've said a lot about the personal stories that have affected you. Tell me about your journey in this and how you see getting the information, the message, the narrative out to the public, to the would-be philanthropists, to the tech community and others who may really bring in a game changer here.
So my office is in the basement of City Hall. I'm in room 18 right off of the Grove Street entrance. And so my clients can come see me with a shopping cart. As you said earlier, I ran the complaint department for Willie Brown, and nobody's a bigger taskmaster than Willie Brown. From his standpoint, all of city government should have run like Nordstrom's on a good day. And so I knew what I had to do. And when I went into this job, it was very important to me that I honor the people who are my clients. When I leave this job, I'll care very little about what the press has to say about me. I wish I could only hear from the people I've worked with. I've not always been successful, but I've treated them with dignity. And I've sat down and I've listened and I've cared. And my cell phone number is still on my business card. And people text me and call me when they're in crisis. And I've tried to be responsive to that. So I'm cool with it. Now, my mother raised me, and she, her best friend was Billie Holiday. So I grew up in a childhood in New York City where heroin was something that I just innately knew growing up as a child. My godmother had been arrested for narcotics and couldn't get a cabaret card, so she couldn't perform in nightclubs and sing. And so the only way she could make money was that my mom and dad were both journalists and newspaper people. And so Lady Sings the Blues was co-authored by my father, and it was written in our living room. But I can remember, and Billie Holiday died because of her drug addiction. She died because of exploitation by crooked cops and the mafia and the record industry and such. But she struggled with heroin, and my mom was so devastated by her death when I was turning 5 that she went to work in heroin addiction programs. So when my parents split up and when I came home from school in the 3rd grade, all our possessions were out on the street. You know, my mom struggled. My dad didn't pay child support, and everything we owned was on the sidewalk. And I can remember walking home with her and seeing all our possessions out on the street. So I don't have to reach too hard to relate. I relate.
That wasn't actually meant to question your dedication.
Oh, I didn't think you were questioning me. You asked where it comes from, and I told you I wasn't. It wasn't. No, I'm happy. I love my childhood. Growing up around jazz aristocracy, my mom managed Charlie Parker. But, you know, there was just a tremendous, you know, to look at how people who were addicts were treated then, it's just unreal. It was just unbelievable how people were criminalized. Mm-hmm. And still, we haven't turned the corner on criminalization of people for homelessness and criminalization of people mm-hmm. who are addicted.
How has your point of view changed from being on the Board of Supervisors to now being in this position?
Well, I don't get to give proclamations anymore. I mean, I don't really have anything easy. I used to cut a ribbon for a washer-dryer place in the Castro. People still remember that. It's pretty consistent what I'm doing, and it's tough. And, at times I think I was more popular as a supervisor. I'm a lot angrier in this job, and I'm more frustrated seeing things. I had the experience where the NEMA building opened up, and there were some people that won what should have been the lottery of a lifetime, which means they got a below-market rent apartment. And unfortunately, one of my colleague agencies in city government was not very careful in reading how they were implementing their below-market rent units and allowed the NEMA to establish that people had to have a 600 credit score. Now, how ridiculous is that, that people are going to exit poverty, potentially exit homelessness with a 600 credit score? And I kept pushing and pushing because, unbelievably, this family of 4 had won. They only won a 1-bedroom, but God bless, they were so happy to have this unit. And they only owed $2,000. God, what I would have traded to have a total debt of $2,000. And they were 39 points short of having that 600 credit score. And I kept pushing, and we raised the money through Hand Up. And it just got to a point where I just got mad because I could tell that they were going to reject this family because the credit bureau was going to take an extra 2 weeks, and we showed them how we had paid the bills. And you know what? I am no Prince Charming, but I got pissed off enough that I co-signed their application. You know, at the time I was only like 640. It wasn't like I had some, you know, whiz-bang credit score, but I co-signed it. I have gone and asked people to co-sign applications of people that were being rejected, you know, for this bogus reason. So I'm a lot angrier, and I'm sure when I depart this job that I have people in the city family that will wish me well.
This is City Visions on KLW.org and 91.7 KLW San Francisco. And we're talking with Bevin Dufty, Director of the Mayor's Office of Housing, Opportunity, Partnerships, and Engagement. And we invite you to call in with your questions and comments at 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. You can email us or text us at cityvisions@klw.org. So let's go to our first caller. We're speaking to Alok from San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I would like to share a small story, if you have some, if you allow me some time.
Please go ahead.
I'm a cab driver. I've been driving cab for over a couple of years. I started a startup company in January, and this is Food Truck Lounge. We opened in Soma in San Francisco. And one night when I was working in my lounge, I need a help to move some furniture. And I saw this person who was just crossing the street. I talked to him. Hey, man, would you like to help me? I need some help. And he said, yeah, I'd love to. I said, would you like to work? I would pay you. He said, yeah, sure. I will like to work. And he helped me. And I asked him, where do you live? And he said, I live just across the corner. I'm homeless, and that's my spot underneath the bridge. I say, okay. And I say, I'm opening this G Food Truck Lounge in Soma. And if you like, can you work with us for, you know, part-time, whatever we help need? And he said, yeah, I'd love to work. And I'm looking for opportunity to work. So over the period of time, we see his honesty, we see his hard work, and me and my business partner decided to give him more opportunity. And now he worked with us full-time, as well as we gave him the membership for 24 Fitness, where he can take shower, freshen up. And the most important part I see in him, he needs just little break, and now he's doing so good, working hard, and as usual, make us proud. And so this is what I want to share it's not about like what city and government doing it, as well as it's about community too, to help each other, to take a small step for at least 1% to bring them out from the homeless.
Alok, I love your story. This is Bevin, and I want to say that the city has a homeless employment collaborative. There are agencies such as Goodwill, Mission Hiring Hall, Episcopal Community Services, and they work to help people exit homelessness through employment, and that's something that you're doing, which is really beautiful. And I do want to acknowledge that when Target opened in the city, they worked with Mission Hiring Hall to hire people out of homelessness, and so many people want to work. And as we said earlier, San Francisco has one of the highest rates of people on SSI disability. But even those individuals can work, and it's about trying to look at work differently. What if we could create some jobs where someone could come in and work 2 or 3 days a week, even for 4 or 5 hours, the dignity that they receive? And Alok, I was really proud. One of the programs I did on a pilot that didn't get picked up because I was hoping that, you know, animal welfare agencies, but the city was euthanizing many small dogs because there was such a glut of small dogs, and we did a program, Woof, where we paid people just $75 a week to socialize or give medicine to these dogs. And in 2 months, they were able to be adopted so that they wouldn't have to be put down. And I think what you're describing, and I appreciate your empathy and your willingness to reach out and make a difference in someone's life. Thank you.
Definitely. I mean, like, I listen NPR all the time, and this is the way I gain my knowledge because I'm driving most of the time. And another thing is, like, again, I tell everybody to just take a small step to help at least 1%. It won't be there any problem.
Well, I hope I get in your taxi cab soon because I really want to shake your hand and thank you. That's great.
Oh, please, if you like, whatever we can help, please stop by at G Food Lounge. We are located in 2nd Street, 431 2nd Street, and I'll love to do more about
great.
Everything.
Great. I'll come visit you. 431 2nd Street. I hope a lot of listeners come join me to come see you. Thank you, Alok.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much for your call. So that's a pretty heartfelt story there, and shows kind of I think what you're trying to explain here, that it's that we need to get more of that human connection, more of the public involved in reaching out in very specific ways, in ways that you describe yourself as really, you know, I hate the term, you know, thinking outside of the box, but just sort of really doing things that you would never expect to do to deal with a problem that seems pretty stubborn to traditional solutions.
Yeah.
So say more about how you multiply that story.
Yeah.
And what is your office doing on that front? Is that part of the mission of your office?
Or do you see that? Absolutely. People reach out to us all the time, and they ask us to partner with them. And I'm really excited about our collaboration with this group, Feeding Forward, the young woman, Komal Ahmad. And so you imagine me listening. I'm holding my smartphone. And so a lot of the technology companies and other businesses feed their employees, and they have sandwiches or things that are not going to be used. And so she's created an app where you just snap a photo of that food on the table, and then it uploads to the site. And then agencies that feed people that are hungry, that might have drop-in or other services, they can punch in and say, I can take those 40 sandwiches because I have drop-in from 2 to 4. And then the company just wraps those sandwiches up, and then a Lyft or an Uber or maybe a Lock, I got to cut him in on this action, can just come and pick it up and take it directly there. Because as you know, I mean, it's thinly staffed at a lot of these agencies. They can't pick up and run through traffic. And what an amazing thing that is. And we had an event at the Chamber of Commerce, and I've been to so many chamber events, and it was a different crowd. Everybody there, and they were from all these different types of businesses, but they were all obsessed with not wasting food. It's an interesting phenomena that exists with people. And so Komal is trying to raise investors, and I was helpful to HandUp.us. Ron Conway's invested in HandUp. And so I think that there's some synergy. And I don't mind that people are not a nonprofit that want to help end homelessness. I think if there's an entrepreneurial approach to exiting homelessness for people that can be more successful, let's do it, because that will motivate more people to get in. As you know, we don't have a single portal, and the mayor and the mayor's chief of staff, Steve Cava, are pushing and pushing because we went to it. But, you know, let's talk about the fact that you have to file. You know, people with SSI disability, they have to go to every different agency and file applications to access housing. How do you think that's going to work out? You know, why can't we have a common application and a common portal that people can pass through? And it is something, again, that technology companies are partnering now with the city to do. And so I don't, you know, I'm sorry that I've kind of turned from some of this discussion and said, let's broaden this dialogue. Let's get everybody involved in this discussion. And everybody should be critical and insistent. But that's where I think the fundamental change is going to come from.
It's more of an active engagement in whatever way. I'm going to take a moment to, speaking of active engagement, to turn it over to Kevin and David to ask for your support for KLW.
Good evening, everyone. Kevin Vance here with David Onick, the other host of City Visions. This has been a very interesting evening. I've heard a bunch of radio programs about homelessness. Tonight, I'm hearing a lot of stories about hope and what people are doing. It's one of those gifts that KLW is able to bring to you. We're asking you to give a little gift to KLW so that we can stay strong and keep bringing you programs such as City Visions. Our number is 800-525-9917. Our website is klw.org. David.
Kevin, we just received a contribution from Meredith Williams in San Francisco, and Meredith says she loves the innovative programming and would be listening to the Giants right now, but she can't turn off City Visions. So, Meredith, we really, really appreciate your support. Thank you for being a part of our community of listeners here at City Visions and at KLW. We invite you to dial in now and join our community of listeners who are supporting this community programming. 800-525-9917. That's 800-525-9917. Or you can click on our website at KALW.org.
We are being challenged this hour on City Visions. A very generous listener has offered us $365 on the condition that we can raise 10 of you to call or click to us in this hour between now and 8 o'clock, the conclusion of City Visions, which is just a short 17 minutes from now. So 10 of you to call and click, call or click at 800-525-9917 or click onto our website, kalw.org, and that will mean an additional $365 so that we can continue to be strong here on KALW and bring you programs such as City Visions. Once more, it's 800-525-9917. Our website is kalw.org. Now back to City Visions.
And this is Joseph Pache, and you're listening to City Visions on local public radio, KLW San Francisco, 91.7 FM, and on the web at klw.org. I'm here with our guest, Bevan Dufty, Director of the Mayor's Office of Housing Opportunity Partnerships and Engagement. And again, we invite you to call in with your questions and comments. Do you have suggestions for new ways the city or the public can engage in finding solutions to homelessness? 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. You can email or text us at cityvisions@klw.org or post a comment at the KLW website.
So, Joseph, I do want to say that we only need 9 donors because I'm making a donation right now to KLW, so that inspires someone to make a donation. We're only 9 away. And then I want to say to Meredith about the Giants that I had this great experience down in the Design District today where I got someone who has been homeless since 1999, and we're trying to jumpstart, and I'll talk about that in a second, but jumpstart his path to housing. And all of the guys that we had, Salvation Army, and we had the SF Hot Team, and we had folks from the Human Services Agency there, and they all started talking about the drubbing by the Dodgers over the weekend, and it was pretty funny, and you realize what a connector the Giants are. And the former Giant, Barry Zito, has been very involved in supporting veterans, and so we appreciate that. But, you know, one of the changes that I think you're aware of is that we are adopting some federal best practices, which I think are good. There's a way in which San Francisco tries to be a little too unique sometimes. And one of the things I really appreciate is that there's an emphasis on what's called coordinated assessment. And it doesn't really sound too sexy or exciting, but coordinated assessment says, in a town like San Francisco where housing for people exiting homelessness is so hard, we have so many case managers that are just chasing any vacancy, and we're not really assessing where will this person do the best in housing. And I think that that is a big change, because that leads to Supervisor Mark Farrell, who's been very active in trying to create a housing ladder, which is something that I feel very strongly in, that sometimes people turn down going into an SRO on 6th Street because they think, with good reason, that they'll be there for the rest of their life. And that if we just set aside so many units of public housing for people who've been successful in supportive housing to move into public housing, that that would be a good thing. Another part of coordinated assessment is realizing that through our homeless outreach team, we've really prioritized what are called HUMs, the highest users of multiple systems, people who are very addicted, very mentally ill, very much in and out of hospitalizations, you know, very expensive people, so to speak. But what gets lost in that sometimes is this man, Victor, that I met this morning, and he's been on the street since 99 because he doesn't qualify for HOT because he's not sick and he's not strung out. And, so part of coordinated assessment is we're dedicating some permanent housing for people that have been homeless the longest, both for veterans, for people with HIV and AIDS, and for the general homeless adult population. But I think that that's important, because looking at people whose length of homelessness is longness is important as well to help people break that cycle.
So first, I want to thank you for your support. Or is this a new or continuing membership, by the way?
I'm making a new donation.
Congratulations. We love new members. But to your point there, what you're saying is that there needs to be an approach that is tailored to the person's circumstances, right? For those who are able to work, opportunities to work. For those who are extremely impaired in terms of their functioning, another mm-hmm. sort of system. And for those in between, a chance to see a way forward. So it sounds like, again, tailoring to the individual. So a couple of other areas that I wanted to ask you about, as a physician, working in this this area for about 10 years now, my concern is the aging population. Mm-hmm. What is the thinking?
What's our push?
What's our plan for what's going to happen to homeless, formerly homeless adults who we've hopefully stabilized and will live longer than they would have otherwise and are now aging in place.
I should point out one of the major accomplishments that we worked with the Human Services Agency on, which was a high priority to the Coalition on Homelessness, is that our access to 90-day shelter beds has been through a line-based system, which really works against people who are elderly, infirm, women. Oftentimes, we'd see people getting out at 3 or 4 in the morning to get in line at Glide because the 90-day beds drop and you don't know from one day to the next. And sometimes being number 5 in line versus number 6 makes a difference between whether you get a reservation or not. So starting in February with the support of the mayor, we made it possible so that people could call 311 to make a 90-day shelter bed reservation. And it's been an absolute game changer. Before, we only knew how many people were in bed, so we knew our shelter beds were 97% full. We didn't see the demand. We didn't see people who didn't want to stay at a certain shelter because they could say that. We did see a huge increase in women, and we started shifting beds, and we're going to have in our emergency winter shelter system, which starts in November, roughly 100 beds for men and about 30 beds for women. For the first time, we're going to have winter shelter through our interfaith program at Bethel AME Church. So I think we have seen that. One of the big pushes of Supervisor Jane Kim, who does a spectacular job of representing both her housed and unhoused residents in District 6, has been for a medical shelter, because we see people who leave hospitals or people who are elderly who cannot attend to their activities of daily living. They cannot make sure they get to the bathroom. They can't take care of having their medicines. And shelter staff are not trained to do that work. So we're working through a task force at the Department of Public Health, led by our great health director, Barbara Garcia, and we are going to focus in on a medical-focused shelter that will be somewhere, less intense than respite and more supportive than what people can receive in shelter. Also, through the 311 system, we were able to identify that roughly 20% of our shelter stayers had spent 400 nights in shelter over the past 2 years. That's not what we designed shelters to be. They're supposed to be an emergency response system. And so we are looking and focusing in on permanently housing that core of people who are mostly people on SSI and Social Security with very limited incomes and not clear paths to housing. So I am very proud about that, and I think that is something that has helped to change the system.
And how about the population aging in supportive housing?
Well, absolutely. We have, many individuals that live in supportive housing have access to in-home care, and there's a lot of coordination between in-home care and, homeless and supportive housing services. I had a woman who was 84, lived in public housing. She had designated her daughter to be her in-home care worker, which you're allowed to do, and her daughter was taking the money and running, and her mother had infestations of, bed bugs, roaches, vermin in her apartment, and she wound up at 84 being evicted and becoming an SF Hot client, and there was sort of not the kind of connection that should have existed between Adult Protective Services and the San Francisco Housing Authority. But again, that's part of the change that Mayor Lee is bringing to public housing. And again, Barbara Garcia has been really a leader going into, making sure that where people are housed who are vulnerable and at risk of homelessness, that we're doing everything possible to addressing, 95% of people that live in supportive housing are successful. That 5%, we need to drive that number down. Too many people are evicted for minor things. Well, not minor in the sense that hoarding and cluttering can be a fire hazard and other things, but we should not be evicting people for hoarding. We should not be evicting people for money where we can work with them and help them to be more successful.
And let's talk about some other issues. As a healthcare provider, some of the things that I find that are barriers to moving on and moving forward are not only mental illness and medical conditions, but substance use disorders. What is the approach, the philosophy? How's it shifting around so-called wet housing? For chronic inebriates and sober-only housing for those who really feel that the only way they can make a positive change in their life is to stay in an environment that's completely supportive of that.
Yeah, let me see if I can hit my 3 points that I want to make with that. I'm a huge advocate of wet housing. You can Google 18...
And say a little bit about what wet housing is.
So you can Google 1811 East Lake and learn a lot about it. But Seattle and Vancouver are cities that have built and opened housing for chronic public inebriates. And I took the mayor. We went and visited it. I thought we were close with a building with the Rene Cazenave building, and it wound up that the provider was not comfortable because of the differences in staffing patterns. But basically, it is very low threshold housing for people that are alcoholics. And what makes it so notable to people is that if an individual is not able to go and procure with their own money their beer, let's say, that they can have a staff member at 1811 Eastlake will go and procure that beer, and they keep it for about 20% of the residents. They have alcohol management where they keep the alcohol and someone can come and access it. But it's just it's a huge change. I mean, we spend probably $60,000 a year on our chronic inebriates on the street, and it does not it does not make sense in any respect. I think that in Laura's Law has been adopted by the Board of Supervisors, and I very strongly feel that Laura's Law is going to be more applicable to people that are housed. My experience is meeting many family members and parents that have adult children who have severe mental illness and are not able to, stick with their treatment. But, there has been a richer toolbox where the mayor has established the CARES program with more psychiatric street outreach worker, higher clinical levels for people on the street, which I think is important because people are sick, with 2,000 chronically homeless individuals still on the streets of San Francisco. And I think that there's been a focus on mental health. And the third point, I did pull them all, is that I love President Obama because the Affordable Care Act is going to provide both mental health treatment and substance abuse treatment. The sad thing is that we're not where we need to be in terms of ramping up those systems. The state is moving a little slower. But the reality is that for our people, they are now able, through Affordable Care Act, the Human Services Agency has signed up with partners, over 65,000 people, and I think it's going to be a big game changer.
Wow, and I was going to ask you next about registered sex offenders, because that's another area where it's impossible to house someone in San Francisco who's homeless.
If I run for state legislature, I promise you I'll help address that issue.
So in the last 2 minutes of a program, what, not to be corny here, what is your hope here, and mm-hmm. what would you like to see be your legacy in this role?
I would like to see a continued partnership between technology and other major stakeholders in San Francisco. The Union Square Business Improvement District, earlier I talked about how they did a research study on panhandling, which really opened people's eyes. They're paying for a outreach caseworker to be in Union Square. That is such a smart, important thing, and the mayor is dedicating 5 stabilization rooms to that effort so that that person can be successful in housing people. And so I want to continue to see partnerships, but I want everyone to feel like they can help change homelessness, that if they feel comfortable having a brief conversation with someone, and I'm only an email away. I'm bevan.dufty@sfgov.org. If you Google search me, the number 4 search is Bevan Dufty Boyfriend, which cracks my boyfriend up all the time. But it's, tell me a story about the person that you connect or see who's homeless. Or if you yourself are at risk, reach out and we'll do our best and we'll work with Season of Sharing. There are resources that we can partner with. And most of all, don't look at homelessness as something that government can solve. It's a challenge to all of us in our society, and I'm not begging the question, but I believe that in this job, I've approached it with a sense of honesty and integrity. And at the end of the day, I'll be happy with that, and that I will live with that. And that, my child has watched me. My child has beseeched me every time I see somebody on the street to give them my card. And I love her. I love Sydney for that. Thank you for letting me be here tonight.
Well, thank you. That was Bevan Dufty, Director of the Mayor's Office of Housing, Opportunity, Partnerships, and Engagement. For a link to this and other City Visions shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Vision page at klw.org. Our engineer this evening was Kevin Vance. Tonight's show was produced by our senior producer, Susie Britton. Join my co-host, David Onick, next Monday for a conversation about all things astronomy with local professor and luminary, Andrew Fracknoy. This is Joseph Pache. Thanks for listening. Good night, and have a great week. So, David, what'd you think of the